what I am trying to say is there is a reason that there are many, many women being drawn into spiritual life, because there is a certain work that can only be done by women. A guy can help a little bit, but there is a certain work that has to do with this relationship with the world soul, which has to do with the sacred energy of matter. And it can only be done by a woman, because a woman is automatically part of the sacred substance of life. Why? Because she can give birth to a soul. She can bring the light of God into this world. A man can't. You can realize it in a transcendent way, but you can't naturally, instinctively give it to life. And this light that belongs to women can also be given to the world soul. This is something that is going to need to happen in the next 20 years in order to facilitate a certain transformation in life. There's a certain light that has to go back to life. A man can help it in a certain way, but for some reason I've been drawn to talk this evening about how a woman does it. The world soul has a light. It's the creative principle of life. That's what the ancients understood it as. It is the ordering principle of life. That's why they use sacred geometry as a way for accessing it and working with it. It is what decides how life evolves. Now, we are going through a shift in the world's evolution. We all know that. We don't really understand the scale of it, and we don't really understand how, in fact, the energy that is in the very core of creation is transforming. And what we also don't understand is that this energy in the core of creation needs the light of awakened spiritual consciousness in order to evolve. I'll repeat that. The light at the core of creation needs the light of awakened spiritual consciousness in order to evolve. It needs this spark. It's a catalyst. One thing Jung discovered in his whole exploration of alchemy and psychological transformation within the individual is that he said everything in life, everything in nature individuates. Just like the acorn will always become an oak tree. But what Jung discovered is that if you participate consciously in this work, it's very important, a spark of light, the alchemist called it a scintilla, a spark of light goes from your conscious self into the unconscious. And it becomes a catalyst. The alchemist called it the spirit Mercurius. It's a messenger from the gods. And it speeds up the whole process immeasurably, which is why you can do in one lifetime what normally would take 400. And this is, of course, the way the self individuates itself within the human being. Now, this happens at the individual level. And one of the ancient teachings, which we have for some reason, or not for some reason, that again, it's been censored from our consciousness, particularly by patriarchal, hierarchical organizations that wanted power for themselves, is that the individual is a microcosm of the whole, of the macrocosm. The Sufis say, for example, Ibn al-Arabi, he says that there is the lesser Adam, which is the individual, and the greater Adam, which is the whole. And an individual, a human individual, is an extraordinary being. I don't know why we're not allowed to see it too much. If you look at them inwardly, they are incredibly, incredibly beautiful. The way the light moves around, the way a human being can access many different levels of consciousness at the same time. They are very, very beautiful. And they are a microcosm of the whole. We have within us everything that belongs to the macrocosm. There is a poem by Rumi in which he describes the process of he actually experienced his own creation, how he went through, he was a mineral, and then he was a plant, and then he was an animal, and how he went through the whole process. Apparently, we do that when we are through the process of conception. We actually consciously experience all the different levels of creation. And you even go through the angelic plane and all of that. And there is this direct relationship between the individual and the whole, because we are completely aligned together. It is, you can think of it holographically, if you like. The whole is present in everybody. It's like Meister Eckhart, who, talking about God, said God is a circle whose center is everywhere. and whose circumference is nowhere. We are each the center of the circle. We are each the whole. And that means, esoterically, we have access to the whole of creation. And for some reason, we don't use it. Organizations are never going to change this world. It isn't made like that. The energy structure of the world does not relate to organizations. The world is a living spiritual being. It is not a problem waiting to be solved. It is incredibly beautiful, incredibly dynamic. It has different levels of consciousness within it. And an individual can be directly aligned to it. And what does that mean? Now, most of you here must have had some spiritual experience, otherwise you wouldn't be here, right? And there was a time in your life, the Sufis call it tauba, a moment of awakening. There is this moment in your life when you went from ordinary consciousness to spiritual consciousness. Otherwise, you wouldn't be interested in any of this. And it is the single most dramatic and important moment in your life, probably until you experience union with God. But as when union with God happens, you're not there, you don't get to experience it. So the spiritual awakening you experience, it changes your life. You go from a 3- or 4-dimensional human being into a 5, 6, however many dimensions you want to get into, right? Your world changes. I had this beautiful experience a couple of years ago of meeting a stewardess on an airline to New York who just had that. And I was so moved. She'd just woken up. She did it for some extraordinary reason at a dream seminar at the Open Center in New York. And what she said to me, she said, was, I thought life was just about getting stuff. And now I realize it's not. And I was just so moved. We had this conversation beside the toilets in the back of the plane. I could just see there was a soul that had woken up. And her whole life had shifted from just getting stuff, which is apparently the American dream, into experiencing this whole inner dimension of herself. And what makes that happen? A spark jumps from one level into the other. It's a moment of grace, really. The Sufi saint Rabia, somebody asked her and said, if I renounce everything and turn towards God, will he turn towards me? And she said, no, never. First, he must look upon you, and then you can look upon him. It is always a moment of grace. It is when this energy goes from the higher to the lower. Changes your life. Now, traditionally, if it happens to the individual, it can happen to the planet. Of this, I am 100% convinced. But it is not going to come from some transcendent God. For the simple reason that transcendent God is transcendent. He's not here. He's transcendent. Yes, there is an aspect of the divine that is transcendent. It's very beautiful, as I say, disembodied consciousness, and you can go beyond there. Planes of non-existence. Read the mystical texts. It's great. But Jung made this important distinction. He said, there is the lumen Dei. This is the transcendent aspect of the divine, the light of God. And he says there is, in alchemy, he discovered this other thing called the lumen naturae, which is the light of nature, which is the light hidden within matter. And that, he said, is what creates the process of inner transformation of the psyche of the self. So that you become not a disembodied center of consciousness, but a living human being who knows what it means to be really alive. Not just a physical person, but a human being. And you should know in the Sufi tradition, there is this image of the Qutb, the pole, that there is in the planet at always one human being, only one, who has realized his real human potential, carries that for the whole of humanity, only one human being at a time, who has realized what it really means to be a human being. But if this light that we have within us, and particularly women, because it works better in women in relationship to life. Women understand the patterns in life, the relationships in life, in a way that men don't. Women have an instinctual relationship to the whole in a way that men don't. Women are part of life in a way that men don't. You just have to look at the masculine culture. It walks like, you know, a few feet above the surface of the earth. For a woman needs to have roots. There needs to be a relationship. There needs to be a garden to tend, whether it's an outer garden or a garden of the soul. And the light of feminine spiritual consciousness needs to be given back to the world soul so that it can transform. Because the next stage of evolution cannot happen without the conscious participation of human beings. This is written down somewhere. There is a book that actually, in which these different transformations are written down, how they have to be. There was a time this work could be done by spiritual masters, what the Sufis call the awliya, the friends of God. And they did that for humanity. Just as in the same way Christ did an extraordinary work for the whole of humanity. He took upon himself the sins of the world. One spiritual being. There's a deep esoteric meaning that. But the next stage we are moving is into a global consciousness. And that means no one person can do it for everybody. It has to be done by human beings coming together. It has to do with the way the next step of human evolution needs to take place. And that's why there are so many different connections being made, bringing different traditions together. It has enormous esoteric significance, because when things are brought together, something can happen that is greater than the sum of the parts. It has to do with a shift in evolution when things are brought together. I remember last time I went back to London, and I was just walking in the streets there, and there were so many different races and languages and people, and they were all living together. It was just the way it is. This is global civilization. This is people being together. And that's on the ordinary relating level. And on a spiritual level, people come together, and individually, they give their light back to the soul of the world. Back to this being that is the sacred substance of life, that is waiting for this energy in order to transform. Without this participation of human spiritual consciousness, it cannot make the next step in evolution. It cannot do it. It cannot be done either by a few monks sitting in caves, a few rishis in the Himalayas. It cannot be done there. Because this is about global civilization, about people coming together and making their own contribution. And remember, the individual is the microcosm of the whole. The individual can have a direct relationship to the very substance of creation, to the soul of the world. As Jung said, there's a very, very important saying when he says, man's anima, man's own soul, is the spark of the anima mundi. Do you realize that the spark of your own soul, which is what draws you inward to explore yourself, which what takes you beneath the surface into the depths of your own self, where you begin to discover whether it's archetypes or energies or powers or music or harmony, whatever it is you discover within yourself, as well as all the monsters and the fears and the anxieties, that spark is also the spark of the world soul. But in the last era of separation, we have separated it. We have become isolated. And we think we experience this isolation on a personal level. We don't realize that is just a reflection of a deeper isolation. That we have separated our spiritual self from the spiritual being of the world. It's a complete illusion, of course. Because the Sufis would say it is just a veil of separation. We can never be separate because we are part of the whole, or we are the whole. There is no such thing as my light. It doesn't exist. The ego is an illusion. There is the light of the whole experiencing life through us. Like Cahil Gibran said when he said, remember, your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. And if we realize that the light within ourselves is part of the light of the world, that it's having this unique experience through this consciousness we call ours. And this light is not a transcendent light. It is a light that wants to live here, that wants to experience something here in this world. It draws us into experiences. Once you begin to work with this lumen naturae within yourself, it is what guides you through life. I always say trying to be guided by the transcendent self is a complete waste of time, because the transcendent self isn't interested in this world. It'll get you into all sorts of mess. People say they're always guided, but they're guided by the wrong thing, you know. The lumen naturae, that is different. Because the lumen naturae understands the rhythms of life, understands the harmonies of existence, understands the patterns of creation, and then there can become this extraordinary dialogue of light to light. When the light of the individual interacts with the light of the whole, this dance, this spark returning back to the soul of the world, then something within the soul of the world opens. Because at the moment, the world, the soul of the world, has been cut off from its own source. It's been cut off because we have said that it does not exist. I have a friend who was brought up in East Germany, where there was nothing, no religion, nothing. The only thing she ever knew when she grew up was that everything that everybody told her was not true. I don't even have any idea what that means, what that does to the soul of a human being. If you're brought up and you're just told you're just a physical person, that's all you are, go and work in a factory, that's all that matters. Art, beauty, culture, literature, religion does not exist. What would that do to you? How that would cut you off from yourself? What sort of world you would live in then? And what sort of world do we live in then? The McDonaldization, the fast food culture. You have to get satisfied by things. And we can't live like that anymore, because there aren't enough things to go around. And the soul of the world has experienced this, because we have cut the world off from its own soul, from its own transformative potential. We have said to the world, you are just a dead object. And then we can have scientific experiments, and we can mine it, and we can pollute it, and it doesn't matter because it's just a dead object. Well, a little bit of light going from one soul back to the soul of the world can change that. It doesn't have to be done by organizations, by thousands of people, no. The alchemists, there were only a few of them, held this tradition for the whole of humanity for hundreds and hundreds of years. It just has to be done by individuals working together who say yes, so that their light can go back to the soul of the world. So this alchemical interaction can begin to wake up something within creation, can begin to wake up creation to its magical potential, to its real transformative potential. We cannot save the world. It has completely gone too far. We have no idea what to do. We don't know how to change the ozone layer. We don't know what to do. But the world itself, if we wake it up, is a magical being. It can heal itself if we give it the light that it needs, if we give it that spark that unlocks the magical potential of life, the power that is waiting within the world. Or it can happen the other way. Or it can happen in the way that the world just erupts, that the violence and power that belong to nature just spill over. That is another possibility. If you mistreat somebody for long enough, they rebel. We don't know what it's like. One thing I was very interested in when the whole thing with Katrina happened, you never heard anywhere people saying, isn't it wonderful to respect the power of nature? Yes, people suffered a lot. They lost their possessions. But there was a very interesting parallel, or not parallel, there were these people in who live off the Thai coast and the Burmese coast. They're called the Mokan, and they're sea gypsies. And when the tsunami came, their whole village was destroyed, and they respected it because they have an understanding of a relationship to the power of nature, that you have to bow down before that aspect of the divine. And nowhere did I hear in what happened with Katrina was there respect for what had happened. We cannot deny that aspect of nature, of power, that is there in the world. Just like you can't deny those powers in your own psyche for too long. Or I guess you take Prozac, don't you? And that kind of quietens it down. So, friends, there is this work to be done in the depths. But it's not just in the depths, because something has changed, and what used to be in the depths is now very near to the surface. There are places one had to go very, very deep within oneself to access, and it's now changed because the worlds are coming together. The worlds that used to be kept far apart are much, much closer together in the last 10 years or so. People don't notice that because they don't know the different worlds and how they work. But states one used to have to go very far away to access, they're now very close. And the soul of the world doesn't, you don't have to, you know, go off into a hut and sit and, you know, for 3 months or be in a cave for 9 years to access. It is here, it's around us. It's present. It just needs our awareness. It just needs us to say yes, to step out of this confine of our own individual self, which we have wrapped ourselves in. And to say, the world needs us. And the world is not just something physical. The world is a living spiritual being, and it needs our light.